At first, it's just words on the page, a stream of consciousness, mixed up thoughts and stories told out of order. But slowly, a narrative starts to form. Sentences are cut, scenes are added, and the words on the page start to take shape. The rest of the day is given to running my business and dodging arrows. At night, when I'm not writing, I'm present with my family. It's one of my non-negotiables. I spend time with Sarah and the kids. We play board games and run around the yard like it's 1985. No distractions. And some of the time I spend with just me on the couch, watching the Hawks. It's my guilty pleasure. I realize that if I take just 1 hour of personal time a day for the next 30 years, I'll gain about 11,000 hours of me time. That's over one full year and a quarter of time. Imagine freeing up an entire year to do what you want. And each day I get up and go to my office. I'm energized from my goal and I'm committed to the process. I tell myself I'm going to make the book part of my daily routine for the duration of the goal, until it's done. It's not a chore, it's a lifestyle. Sure, some days I feel like slacking off, but I have a post-it on my computer that reads, "Remember tomorrow." That always gets me through. And I'm ahead of schedule. I have the first 60 pages done in 2 weeks. Just as I start to clean up my diary, I realize my experience at the monastery might be able to help others. We can all access our inner monk, slow the clock, and remove the lid on happiness. We can become better listeners. We can get more out of life, and that means go out and do things, take chances. That's what I'm doing. But you'll have plenty of reasons not to. Kids, getting older, and I don't know what I'm doing. The excuses will pile up fast, but don't listen to those voices. Beat up the bully in your own head, and once you make up your mind to take the chance, take it right away. Turney once told me that when addicts agree to go to rehab, the protocol is to immediately drive them to the airport. He said, statistically, that each passing hour when addicts are not on the way to rehab, the chances of them not going goes up exponentially. It's because addicts listen to all of the excuses about why they don't really need to go to rehab. I think the same thing happens to all of us sometimes. Once the moment passes, it's really hard to get it back. Urgency is our friend, and we should treat it as such. My 60 pages shrink to 40 as I cut whole sections that don't matter. It's hard to read your own writing and have an objective opinion. Some days I think it's good and other days I think it sucks. But I need to stay focused on the task and not listen to the voice, Billy the Bully, in my head that's telling me to stop or it's not any good. The diary needs some more work, but I think it's important to keep it authentic. Authenticity over everything. I don't want to play with it too much. It needs to be a diary. I find opportunities to illuminate more and touch on thoughts that were in my head that never made it to the page. I keep going. One of the most asked questions I've gotten since returning is, have I changed? Into what? I haven't changed. I've expanded. I now have a collection of memories in my brain's photo album that I can access at any time. I gain insight I can draw upon at any moment. So, sure, I've changed, but only in the sense of feeding my soul. Another important gift I took from my stay is patience. Now when I have to go to some lengthy engagement or something I used to think of as a painful waste of time, it's a walk in the park. I can sit through anything for 3 or 5 hours at a time now without hesitation. Long drives? No problem. 5-hour layover in Detroit? Easy peasy. Catholic wedding ceremony? Layup. I used to fight those moments every minute of the way. Now, I have a different appreciation for time. In some ways, this experience is similar to my experience with Seal. Back then, I reinforced a mentally tough mindset. But with the monks, I learned to develop a peaceful, serene, no-worry mindset. I changed my spiritual diet. It helped me focus on what is truly important and realize that much of my worry is irrelevant. My experience enhanced all situations and allowed me to be present, and I can tap into it at any point during my day. Last night, my son had a fever, and we knew we were in for a long night. I'm so sorry. I can't stay with him because I'm leaving for the airport, Sarah said. Can you do it? Sorry? Why are you sorry? It was a walk in the park. I woke our son up every hour. I checked his temperature and made sure he was all right. I probably slept a total of 3 hours, but not once did I think about how bad it sucked. I was grateful that I'm in a position to care for my children. It's a gift. Being a dad is what I signed up for, and that means anything that comes along with it. Fever is part of the process, and that's what I signed up for. But without my monk experiences, I probably wouldn't have been so carefree about it. I probably would have bitched and whined. And by this morning, I'm happy to report, my son is already feeling better. I take the next week to clean up my diary and write down all of my takeaways. It's the routines, habits, and mindset I learned. But it's a different kind of writing, so I have to change gears a little bit. It's not something I'm used to. I wrote primarily in a narrative form for my first book, and writing rhymes and jingles is a whole different skill set. But thankfully, no experience is required, so I just show up and write. 3 weeks later, I finish. It's not pretty, but it's much easier to work with than 250 blank pages. The first draft of my book is done. The next day, I'm on my way over to the local country club where I have a meeting. I'm taking a break from the book to let it breathe. I once read that Stephen King likes to hide his manuscripts in a drawer for 6 weeks after he types the end. But I'm no Stephen King, and I have a deadline that doesn't line up with that timetable. I pull my car into the parking lot near the front entrance, lock my car, and head over. I have an appointment or a meeting. Actually, I'm not sure what to call it. It's more like an interview, I guess. One thing I'm sure about is that it's not a mission. But I was asked to be part of an entrepreneurial club that actually has a membership. I didn't seek it out, but when they contacted me, it sounded really interesting, something that might be mutually beneficial. Inside the building, it feels exactly like you'd expect a suburban country club to feel like. Elegant architecture and the smell of old money. The vested gentleman behind the front desk directs me to the meeting room. As I make my way across the red carpet, I can visualize how hopping this place must be in the summer. I can see kids running around in bathing suits and men and women in golf attire. But today it's fairly empty. I pass an older couple who smile at me, and then I see a couple of business guys looking guilty for not being at work. As I enter into the formal meeting room, I see Ted standing there, waiting for me. He's about my age and looks like he might have been a member of the Young Republicans Club in college. He's cleaner cut than cleaning products. I bet if you flipped him upside down, he'd make a hell of a mop with that perfectly parted brown hair. Or maybe you could hang him on your rearview mirror as an air freshener. And he's so proper with a firm handshake and pearly white teeth. I instantly feel like I know this guy. By know him, I mean I know what he likes and how he operates and what he's looking for. The dude is all business. And he probably doesn't use the word dude. We sit. He explains how the club works and what kind of candidates they're looking for. They not only want to network across the country, they want to find synergies that help members succeed. It sounds like a I got a guy or girl network, meaning that if you're a member, then you'll most likely have a trusted contact in almost every industry. I've never been in a business club before, but the more he talks about the concept, the more appealing it sounds. Eventually, we start to go down some side streets with personal talk. Ted is a family man. He's giving off a high ethics and moral vibe. I like him. Once he concludes his pitch, He smiles, and then he nods his head slightly up and down. "So," Ted says, "can I see your resume?" "My resume? I don't have a resume."
"What do you mean you don't have a resume?" he asks.
"Everyone has a resume."
"Well, I don't. I don't believe in them."
He's looking at me like I just told him I believe the world is flat. He's so confused. And then after he gets over his shock, I tell him I don't believe in resumes in the traditional sense. I think it's more important to have a life resume, you know, like collecting moments, creating experiences, and doing more. I believe that's a real indication of who you are. He doesn't disagree, so I keep going. "Did you know that the average recruiter scans a prospect's resume for only 6 seconds, I say? 6 seconds. 6 seconds to determine whether someone is qualified for the job. I don't know about you, but I don't think that's enough time to judge someone's life work. If people focus more time on having experiences, it'd give them more depth. It might even help them land their dream job."
"That's interesting."
"Yeah, what if we flipped the model upside down and spent more time on building our life resume?"
"Well," Ted says, "what's your first job experience on your life resume?"
"Breakdancing," I say. "I drove from Long Island to Washington, D.C. in 1985 and made $41. It was one of the best experiences of my life." This is clearly the first time he's ever discussed breakdancing in a membership meeting. I take him through the story of my friend Myron and me convincing my sister to drive across a few state lines to breakdance and make some money. I do it in under 3 minutes. Then I tell him I've only eaten fruit until noon for 27 years. I have the same friends from elementary school. I used to manage my favorite music group of all time, Run DMC. I ran 100 miles. I live with a Navy SEAL for 31 days. And I just got back from a 2-week stint at a monastery with monks. Monks who lived there for 50 years. "Oh," I say, "and I have a wife, 4 kids, and a lot of gratitude for life." Ted's mouth is open. He has perfect teeth. They must have cost his parents a fortune.
"Did you say you live with a Navy SEAL?"
"Yeah, and wrote a book about it."
"And you've just come back from living at a monastery?"
"Yeah. The monks I stay with breed German shepherds and train dogs."
"German shepherds?
Oh, and the nuns make cheesecake."
"They make cheesecake? Delicious.
I'll have them send one for you if you like."
"You like cheesecake?"
Not really, but whatever possessed you to go live at a monastery?
Have you ever read the book The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari by Robin Sharma? It's the story of a lawyer who loses everything and finds himself.
"I haven't read it, but is that why you went there? To find yourself?"
"No. I went there to find out how to live my life in a more meaningful way."
"Did you?"
"What I found was that I already knew how to live my life in a meaningful way. It's like the wiring had been put in place the entire time. The monks just showed me where the on switch was. Don't get me wrong, we're not all wired to be monks. I went there to get a piece of the monks. It's like those DNA kits they can send to your home to find your nationalities, except this is different. I wanted to make monk 10% of my DNA, not 100%. I spend the next 15 minutes telling him about my experience, and then I mention I'm writing a book about it. He's fascinated. He tells me he's always romanticized about taking some sort of spiritual sabbatical, but he just hasn't been able to find the time. He keeps firing questions at me, and then I hit them right back to him. "This is why I think life resumes are more important," I say. "Think about it. If you're at work, who do you want to sit next to at the lunch table? The guy who volunteers at a prison on the weekends and has a painting studio in his house? Or the guy who spent his whole life crunching numbers and analyzing the economy?"
"Prison painter?"
"I agree. And I also believe networking has become shallow," I say. "Everyone is so concerned with connecting on social media. adding followers, collecting business cards, and shaking as many hands as they can at a cocktail party. But how strong is that network when you really don't know the people? Sure, coffee is great, but I still think you need to go deeper. That's why experiences are so important, especially experiences you do with others. Right now, I can call and count on people who I have deep connections with, not because I bought them a bagel and followed up with a thank you email. It's because I have true connections, moments, if you will, and experiences that will last a lifetime. If you ever climb Mount Washington with someone, they'll be your friend for life. An experience is like making a deposit in the bank. We can draw on it at any time. Ted stands up to shake my hand. I really hope you consider our club. We love to have you. I fight the urge to tell him, thanks, but no thanks. What's that old line by Groucho Marx? I'd never join a club that'd have me as a member. Something like that. As I walk through the lobby to the parking lot, my thoughts are clear. If you want to live like a monk, good for you. But do it at a monastery. If you want to live life in the outside world, live it with urgency and build your life resume. Part of my why as it relates to the monastery was to add to my life resume. It's another experience, another adventure, another thing I can look back on and be proud of as I get older. I'm a believer in having a bucket list. Bucket lists are great, meaning Mick Jagger is on mine. But I'm a much bigger believer in dropping the B in bucket, adding an F, to create a bucket list. The bucket list is a collection of things you always wanted to do, but maybe were too scared, felt the timing wasn't right, or maybe you believed you didn't have enough experience. They are the things that require some risk, some fear, and may result in failure. But those are the things that make you feel most alive. After many days of edits and reading the manuscript over and over again, I finally open up my computer and attach the document in an email to my editor. I click send. The email box vanishes from my screen. I grab my pen and walk over to my bucket list and cross off number 33. 33, living with monks in a monastery. 34, ride a bike across the country. 35, learn sign language. 36, black belt in Krav Maga. 37, write a screenplay. 38. A final thought. Here's what I want everyone who finished reading this book to do. Go to www.jesseitzler.com/life-resume and sign your name and list the one thing you're going to go out and do with urgency that you've been wanting to do but haven't found the right time. An experience that is out of your comfort zone and perhaps scary. And once a month for an entire year after my book publishes, I'm going to pick one person at random and compensate their adventure if they supply a proof of purchase. And the list has already started. 1. Turney Duff. I'm going to take a stand-up comedy class. 2. Lisa Leshny. Heli-skiing. 3. Kate Hartson. Take a fencing class. 4. Brian McDonald. I'm going to sign up for a trapeze class. 5. Sarah Blakely. I want to run a half marathon. 6. Laser Itzler. I'm going to camp out on Mount Washington in the winter. 7. Mark Brown. I'm going to run the Boston Marathon. 8. 9. 10. Acknowledgements. The monks of Newskeet reminded me of the importance of having a strong community. With its support, we can exceed our wildest expectations. I would like to take a moment to thank my community and tribe on this project. Turney Duff, Lisa Leshny, Jennifer Kish, Mark Edelman, Kenny Reisman, Mark Brown, Jeff Fortson, John Cornick, Mark Hodelich, Brian McDonald, Kate Hartson, Ralph Zetterstein, all those at Center Street Books, and Dee Dee DiBartolo. I'm so grateful for your time and efforts. I also want to thank Josh the Cook for all the amazing meals and newspapers, and Lenny the Intern for sparing me. You kept me on my toes, Lenny, and I'm glad we became almost friends. A heartfelt thank you to the remarkable nuns of Newskeet, Sister Patricia, Sister Cecilia, and Sister Rebecca. I'm so grateful for how you accepted me into your monastery, for your wisdom, and for the delicious cheesecake. Obviously, this book would not have been possible without the welcoming love and support of the monks of Newskeet. A huge spiritual shout out to Brother Thomas, Brother Christopher, Brother Stavros, Brother Mark, Brother John, Brother Luke, Brother Peter, Brother Gregory, Brother Ambrose. Your warmth and hospitality went above and beyond what was expected. Thanks for making me feel so at home, and thanks for all the bananas. Sorry about those Cliff Bars. Lastly, I want to thank my incredibly loving and encouraging wife, Sarah, for holding down the fort while I was gone. Thanks for letting me use some of my 36,000 free hours on this adventure and letting me fill my plate with what I love to do. I told her that this trip would allow me to be more present in our relationship going forward. I hope I was right. I'm so lucky to have you. Thank you for all your support on my quest to building my life resume. Hashtag, what's next? Jesse.
This has been a Hachette audio production of Living with the Monks, What Turning Off My Phone Taught Me About Happiness, Gratitude, and Focus. Written and read by Jesse Itzler. Produced by Greg Cooler. Directed by Fleet Cooper. Recorded by Dante Hodge. Post-production by Ryan Jones at Listen Up Audiobooks. Living with the Monks is also available in print and as an ebook from Center Street, a division of Hachette Book Group. For more Hachette audio productions, visit us at hachetteaudio.com. Thank you for listening. Text copyright 2018 by Jesse Itzler. Audio production copyright 2018 Hachette Audio. All rights reserved. Hachette Book Group supports the right to free expression and the value of copyright. The purpose of copyright is to encourage writers and artists to produce the creative works that enrich our culture. The duplicating, uploading, and distribution of this book without permission is a theft of the author's intellectual property. If you would like permission to use material from the book, other than for review purposes, please contact permissions at hbgusa.com. Thank you for your support of the author's rights.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.